Serena, when you're sitting around during those glorious lazy days over the Christmas period, it's lovely to have a book of short stories to dip into. A book of Christmas short stories is even better, as you can soak up the atmosphere of Christmas's past as you work your way through the stories and the leftover turkey. Well, Penguin Books have obliged this year with the Penguin Book of Christmas Stories from Truman Capote, making a whiskey sodden fruitcake, to Laurie Lee sliding her way across a frozen pond while out on a cold Christmas walk in the country. The great writers offer up wonderfully evocative stories. Mary McGill has been reading the collection and she joins me now from our Galway studio. This isn't just a matter of tickling old memories and reacquainting yourself with stories that you may remember from Christmases past. There's more involved, Mary.
Yes, there certainly is. I mean, there's stories in here that I was never acquainted with. The Fir Tree being one of them by Hans Christian Andersen, and I know people go, but surely that's a fairy tale. And indeed it is, Sean. It's about a little fir tree growing in the forest who ends up becoming a Christmas tree and having all its dreams come true. But
Are you saying that things like that can't happen at Christmas, Mary? Don't spoil it on me.
Anything can happen at Christmas. But this, you know, this kind of cute little story about a tree, like a lot of these stories, really taps into the kind of melancholy that comes with Christmas too. This little tree is wishing its life away, not appreciating the beauty and the peace that it finds in the forest. It thinks, you know, it's won the lottery when it becomes a Christmas tree, but we all know what happens to Christmas trees after Christmas. So this cute little tale is actually a much wider reflection on what it is to enjoy life when you have it and not be wishing it away. So, I mean, that's one of the early stories. So right away you're like, oh, this is a... I mean, the classics are in there. We're going to talk about that. But really, I mean, we're talking about stories that take place everywhere from Paris to Texas. So yeah, it'll give you some idea.
And I suppose one of the difficulties when for the selection of Christmas stories or anything to do with Christmas, in fact, for some people it's a great season and they love it and it's wonderful and all the rest. For others, there might be complicated memories around Christmas, maybe a loss, or maybe it brings up difficulties in current life, and, you know, all of the happiness and jollity around you, in fact, can lead to a very difficult set of emotions to deal with. Do the stories address those type of complicated issues?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking as you're talking there, particularly of Langston Hughes's story, and he was a leading character in the Harlem Renaissance, and set in the 1930s in a small town in America where segregation is very much in place. And it looks at the issue of racism on Christmas Eve and what that means for a black maid and her little boy, little Joe. And immediately you're like, you know, these people don't experience Christmas in the same way. There's all kinds of exclusions that apply throughout the year, and of course because Christmas is this time of heightened emotions and so on, that these kind of problems become even more magnified if you're on the receiving end of them. So it's a kind of collection that you're like, yeah, you've got your classics, but there are moments when you're like, oh, wow, this is a different perspective on the Christmas story than we've seen before.
Let's have a listen to a little bit of that Langston Hughes story that you mentioned. In fact, One Christmas Eve is the title of the story, and this is the opening section.
Standing over the hot stove cooking supper, the colored maid, Arky, was very tired. Between meals today, she had cleaned the whole house for the White family she worked for, getting ready for Christmas tomorrow. Now her back ached and her head felt faint from sheer fatigue. Well, she would be off in a little while if only the missus and her children would come home to dinner. They were out shopping for more things for the tree, which stood already tinsel hung and lovely in the living room, waiting for its candles to be lighted. Arky wished she could afford a tree for Joe. He'd never had one yet, and it's nice to have such things when you're little. Joe was 5, going on 6. Arky, looking at the roast and the white folks oven, wondered how much she could afford to spend tonight on toys. She got only $7 a week, and 4 of that went for her room and the landlady's, daily looking after Joe while Arky was at work. Lord, it's more than a notion raising a child, she thought. She looked at the clock on the kitchen table. After 7. What made white folks so darned inconsiderate? Why didn't they come on home here to supper? They knew she wanted to get off before all the stores closed. She wouldn't have time to buy Joe nothing if they didn't hurry. And a landlady probably wanted to go out shop too and not to be bothered with little Joe.
And that's actor there, Lancelot Shobear, reading the opening section of One Christmas Eve by James Mercer Langston Hughes, one of the stories chosen in the Penguin Book of Christmas Short Stories that Miriam Gill is speaking to us about this evening. Obviously, the story of a black family, there are a black writer and an African-American actor reading it as well. Is diversity well represented? You know, are different ethnic minorities and different groups represented well in the collection, Mary?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, I was immediately taken, you know, we've got Elizabeth Bowen, we've got Angela Carter, and we, you know, and we've just heard that excerpt there. So again, it is about offering, again, the classics are in there, but there is, you know, there are so many dimensions to Christmas and what it means and who gets to celebrate it and how, as we just heard in that clip. I mean, one of the things that really strikes you about this story in particular is the casual indifference of the white family towards this black maid who, you know, is desperate to get home to her son. And that is not a perspective that we hear that often in terms of, you know, the classic Christmas story. So, I mean, in terms of diversity in the collection, it's very interesting.
I decided, I've just come across in the library Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, and I thought, I'm going to reread that now over the few weeks ahead of Christmas, just to put myself in the mood. And indeed, it really does put you in the mood, and you're reminded of how brilliant it is. But I suppose that's a very early example of the ghost story becoming part of a Christmas story. Was Dickens the kind of start of that, and is the ghost story well represented in this collection?
It is. I mean, Dickens was very savvy, Sean. He saw the way the tide was turning back in Victorian England with the rise of the periodical, because A Christmas Carol as we know it today was originally published in 1843, but it came out, it was serialised initially, right? So these three stories.
What's
interesting about the ghost story is it actually predates, even though it's traditionally associated with Christmas, it actually predates this Christian feast that we now celebrate, because we had the midwinter feast back in pagan times, and the ghost stories were associated with that as well. So it has there's something about this time of year. It's dark, it's cold, it's mysterious. If you survive it, which was, you know, the origins of all these festivals, you're alive and that's great, but you're also very much aware of death, right? You know, and illness and so on. So the ghost story has deep, deep roots when it comes to Christmas. But Charles Dickens was very savvy in terms.
Yeah, he knew it was that. So Angela Carter is one of the ghost stories that we get in this collection. The Ghost Ships is the title of the story?
The Ghost Ships is the title of the story, Sean. And I tell you, it is quite unlike any ghost story or Christmas ghost story I've ever read before. It's hilarious. It refers to a true period in history in the 17th century when Christmas was banned by the Puritans in New England. They saw it as a heathen festival that had no place in their society. This ban was eventually overturned, but you could have been fined for it back in the day. So Carter takes this idea, and it's Christmas Eve in Boston Bay, and these three ships sail into Boston Bay. The first one is built of mossy yule logs that are bound together with ivy, and it's full of fruit, and it spreads its fruit all over the bay. And of course, this is to try and tempt the sleeping Puritans. The second ship then, she says, belches forth a savory aroma, and it spills, it's in the shape of a pie dish, and then it spills beef gleaming with gravy, swans upon spits and roast geese dripping with hot fat again into the bay.
I'm hungry just listening.
I tell you, it's spectacular. But the last boat is full of revellers. The Puritans would be spinning in their beds, and they are having the time of their life, and the number one reveller is the Lord of Misrule, and he he is apparently Santa Claus's father, but he's abandoned Santa Claus because Santa Claus isn't obscene enough for his taste. But basically, he takes one of the puddings that has been deposited into the bay, throws it towards the shore, and when the children wake up in the morning, they have juicy raisins in their shoes and they don't know where they came from.
Right, fabulous. Okay. So it's both macabre, scary and hilarious by the sounds of it. And
joy.
Rather over the top, it must be said as well. Truman Capote is in there as well. I suppose the other thing that a lot of Christmas stories will do, if they do bring back memories, there's probably a tinge of nostalgia in there, maybe a little bit of a lump in the throat even as you read. Is this the case with The Christmas Memory, Truman Capote?
100%. I mean, this absolutely made me cry. Partly thinking as well, because it is autobiographical in terms of Truman and his life. So this is the young boy, Buddy. He's around 7 years old, and he kind of lives in this chaotic setup, but he's very close to his much older cousin, who doesn't really have a name. And they have a little dog called Queenie, and they effectively, Sean, live in their own world. And in the run-up to Christmas, they have this kind of tradition where his unnamed cousin makes makes a fruitcake in November every year, so they have to procure the alcohol for the fruitcake and the pecans for the fruitcake, and they send some to President Roosevelt. And between the jigs and the reels, they create this little world for themselves around the traditions of Christmas.
But let's listen. Yeah, what were you going to say? We know what?
Well, we know kind of that things are not going to end up in the way that we would want.
Not going to be a great Christmas memory by the end of it. I have Truman Capote actually reading a little bit of it. And here, this is a section where the young fellow is talking about, he introduces us, in fact, to his cousin.
Imagine a morning in late November, a coming of winter morning more than 20 years ago. Consider the kitchen of a spreading old house in a country town. A great black stove is its main feature, but there is also a big round table and a fireplace with two rocking chairs placed in front of it. Just today, the fireplace commenced its seasonal roar. A woman with shorn white hair is standing at the kitchen window. She is wearing tennis shoes and a shapeless gray sweater over a summery calico dress. She is small and sprightly like a bantam hen. But due to a long youthful illness, her shoulders are pitifully hunched. Her face is remarkable, not unlike Lincoln's, craggy like that, and tinted by sun and wind. But it is delicate, too, finely boned, and her eyes are sherry-colored and timid. "Oh, my," she exclaims, her breath smoking the window pane. "It's fruitcake weather."
Truman Capote reading from his own story, A Christmas Memory, which is part of the Penguin Group of Christmas Stories. And Mary McGill speaking to us about it from Galway this evening. I think we should finish with a couple of Irish ones and a couple of classic. Celtic, let's start with. Dylan Thomas is in there.
Oh, yeah, Dylan Thomas. I mean, a child's the memory of Christmas in Wales. I mean, it's just, it's exquisite. It's perfect. It's not necessarily a story. It's more of a kind of stream of consciousness, but the vividness of it and the nostalgia just channels you along. It's a beautiful piece of writing.
And I think you mentioned Elizabeth Bowen already, didn't you? Green Holly is her story.
Yeah, Elizabeth Bowen is a dab hand at ghost stories, and this is set in a big house somewhere in the English countryside during World War II, where the ghosts are very much part of the Christmas Eve celebrations.
And finally, Frank O'Connor. This is a kind of an edge to this story, and people who know the story will know why, but you're not going to tell us what that edge is. But just give us the essence of the story.
So we've a very bold boy by the name of Larry Delaney, who has broken his mother's heart, Sean. Let's be honest about it. And she is trying to get him to behave, and she's dangling the prospect of not getting anything from Santa Claus to get him to stay in school and study and work hard and all of these things, which his younger brother's son is very good at doing. And of course, she's not doing this to be cruel. The narrator, Larry's father is very much absentee. He's a drunkard. Yeah. He's not anybody to aspire to. So of course, his mother is trying to get him on the right path. But unfortunately, for her and for Larry on Christmas morning, he does something very, very bold indeed. Mm. And that leads to, I think, a loss of innocence that obviously moves Larry and certainly moves the reader.
And we certainly know what happens to bold or naughty boys and girls around Christmas time,
sure,
so you want
do.
To be careful with that one. Frank you O'Connor's would. Christmas Morning, one of the stories there. Mary McGill speaking to us about the Penguin Book of Christmas Stories, edited by Jessica Harrison, and it is, of course, published by Penguin.